My next guest is Gene Hoffman, who is an executive and entrepreneur who has built successful companies in the global pharmaceutical, veterinary, and healthcare information technology industries. In 2006, she founded Putney, a Portland-based pet medicine company that was sold last year for $200 million. Well, I'm impressed. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You also happen to be one of our 50 Mainers this year for Maine Magazine, so congratulations on that honor.
Thank you. It is an honor. I'm looking forward to seeing who the other 49 are this year.
Tell me about your company. Tell me why you decided that you wanted to go into pet medicine.
I had been in the pharmaceutical industry actually my entire career. And so Putney was the second company I built here in Portland, Maine. And the first one was also, it was healthcare information technology, and the information was related to pharmaceuticals. And with selling that company, it was the HIT sector was consolidating, and the information we provided helped companies find niche products that were more profitable, had less competition on a global basis. So I wanted to take that expertise and develop a company that did that type of product. And I looked at a number of places where I thought there would be product opportunities and found a great opportunity in pet medicine where there was no successful generic drug company. But pet owners, as many of you know, spend a lot of money on their pet family members. And very few people have insurance. And so there was a real opportunity to provide lower cost generic drugs for pets, just like people are using for their prescription drugs for their human family members that are saving the US healthcare system so many billions of dollars.
What was your, was there an aha moment? Were you a pet owner yourself? Where did you come to this realization that this was where you wanted to focus your energies?
Well, it was driven by two things, and one was a cat I had some years back, one of our early adopted cats who, in his old age, developed hyperthyroidism, which is common in cats, and he required medication initially once a day and then twice a day, and there was, at the time he first went on this medication, no generic, and it was a human drug. So it was initially $30 a month for my cat and then $60 a month for my cat, which is a lot of money for many people. And I knew that the product could be generic, and eventually it was generic as a human drug. So that was part of it. And then the other part of it was, as I mentioned, that I saw this opportunity to build a company that provided cost savings and really provided a great service to pet owners so they could afford to care for their pets. So it was both an attractive financial opportunity and driven by this love of my cat and the understanding that lots of people love their pets.
How did you decide that you wanted to go into business?
That's an interesting question because I come from a family, I'm from Washington, D.C., and I come from a family of writers, editors. My brother writes books. And so it was not the expected course. But I majored in East Asian history at Bowdoin. And I was really interested in China. And I had learned Chinese. And so I went back to DC. And my first job that I got was at a quasi-governmental organization that was assisting U.S. companies wanting to open up business with China. And being the lowest person on that totem pole when I was hired as a kid right out of Bowdoin, I was assigned to lead a Chinese delegation around the U.S. that no one wanted. And they were a bunch of chemical engineers running pharmaceutical factories in China. And that's really how I got in. I took these people all around the US and they reciprocated by inviting me to visit their facilities in China. and Chinese pharmaceutical manufacturing of what's called the API, the active pharmaceutical ingredient that makes the drug work. These factories were located in the Chinese hinterlands for security reasons, and Westerners were not allowed. But because these high-level Communist Party members had invited me, and I was not a chemical engineer and not a chemist and, you know, 22 years old and not really a threat to anybody, I was allowed to go visit. And it was an incredible opportunity to learn and build connections. And that was the start of my career-long involvement in the pharmaceutical industry.
You went to Bowdoin at a time when there were not that many women because they had only recently integrated.
This is true. Joni Benoit and I were in the class of 1979, and that's a really long time ago.
And they also, I'm not sure that all the men that went to Bowdoin at that time necessarily wanted women to be introduced to their college. Is that
fair to say? They all wanted women to be introduced, whether they wanted them as equal members in their fraternities and to really have women as equals in 50% of the campus, that would be the question.
So tell me what that was like as a learning environment for you as a starting out as a 17-year-old.
Well, I think that it actually helped me to become tougher in ways that were helpful, because Bowdoin was not my tribe. And I didn't fully become conscious of that till after I'd left. And, you know, years later, like many people, I sort of figured out more about who my tribe was and built connections on a global basis and looked back perhaps more insightfully than I had looked at things when I was 18 and starting Bowdoin. But I think it made me tougher. It was a place where I was pretty different from most of the people, certainly the prevailing group at Bowdoin. And it wasn't, it was in many ways hostile, you know, to be, I think the male-female ratio when I started was 4-1. I hadn't realized that when I applied. But I think it overall was helpful in making me tougher, because as a woman in business, and the businesses I've been in, the roles I've had, have always been pioneering, groundbreaking, entrepreneurial, building things, fighting battles. So, you know, being in a hostile environment with a tribe that wasn't mine was actually really helpful.
Some people don't like conflict. Some people don't like the having to be in a hostile environment. Is this something that you, well, I don't want to say liked, but is it something that you felt comfortable enough that you could actually grow within it rather than recede within yourself?
That's a really perceptive observation, and I am not a person who dislikes conflict. I actually really like conflict. Not for the sake of doing battle, but for instance, in a company environment, I like different points of view coming out, because that's how you arrive at the best decision. In terms of targeting markets, if you don't have conflict, you're not going against or creating a, you're not going against a competitor or creating a big opportunity. You know, to just accept things as they are, grow incrementally, go along with the crowd has zero interest for me.
So in some ways, even though they weren't your tribe, it was kind of a perfect place for you to be at Bowdoin at the time.
I hesitate to agree with you on perfect, but I learned a lot. And I guess I would agree that there are so many opportunities in any situation to make the best of it and to learn and to triumph individually, not over other people, but in terms of your own development. And I've always welcomed those opportunities and, you know, cherished that kind of characteristic in other people. And I think that's part of how we succeeded at Putney, is we built a whole team of people who loved nothing more than overcoming obstacles. You know, intellectual challenges, things that hadn't been done before, tough submissions and regulations at the FDA. You know, how do you figure that out and do it to a really excellent level where you can succeed? You know, the people who love doing that are the people who built the company. And, you know, that's very much how I am. You know, bring it on. Let's take that hill.
As I'm listening to you talk about these situations you are in, you describe fortuitously becoming involved in Chinese industry. And China has subsequently become really well known as a worldwide leader in industry. But back when you were doing this, I don't think that people recognized that that was the case.
You're right.
And then also health information technology, which I'm thinking that when you were doing this, we were still doing paper charts up until about 20 years ago. So health information technology was also still new and not recognized, I think, quite yet as being what it was going to become. And then pet pharmaceuticals, which now we all say, oh, of course. But you're talking about just consistently bumping up against things that didn't exist yet as being important, and still being willing to, I guess, feel your way through.
I sought those out. Yes. At Newport, which was the first company I built in healthcare information technology, I used to describe our chief competitor as two of them, paper files and in your head. So we really were doing something new and bringing a computerized database with proprietary algorithms and data to enable people to search for information that previously they might have found or kept on paper files or had in their head. And so, yes, it was revolutionary, and that made it fun.
There's also a need to be, in addition to being willing to deal with conflict, there's also a need to be collaborative and persuasive. Because if you're dealing with health information technology, you're also dealing with people who are kind of happy with the status quo. I mean, I've worked within the health field now for 2 decades, and I know that there are still people who wish that we were back on paper charts.
And there's... Well, we weren't dealing with charts, and we weren't dealing with healthcare providers. We were providing information on pharmaceutical manufacturing, patent sales to pharmaceutical companies. So you're particularly right when your business impacts consumers and patients and providers who are serving them. And that is an area where much greater sensitivity is needed, and there are far greater implications in terms of HIPAA or prior to HIPAA people's confidentiality and risk of, you know, treatment not being documented. So very important point, particularly in that area. But certainly, yes, I have described the central dilemma and characteristics of an entrepreneur as being around how much to listen and how much to not listen and forge your own way. And that encompasses what you're talking about. Yes, you have to not only be collaborative, but you have to be able to inspire other people whom you're leading or working with. You have to inspire other people to take on your new thing, your new system, to adopt your generic drugs for pets when their vet practice is used to paying more and, you know, buying from the brand side and sucking up all of their information that they provide. So you have to convince people, and therefore you have to be able to listen and understand their point of view. And at the same time, you have to be able to see the new way and chart that course for others to the new way. And so it's a very important combination of skills. You know, get it wrong and you can be a bully. I won't mention any now. Or you can be totally dragged down by the existing paradigm. So you have to have a unique fusion of those two characteristics. Malcolm Gladwell talks a lot about the characteristics of entrepreneurs and people who drive change, and he's very perceptive on this subject.
What are you working on now? What is your latest business endeavor?
So I am investing and looking for investments in early stage companies. I'm also serving on some boards of directors and in discussions about other boards of directors. And I'm looking to help a number of companies at various stages, from startup to larger companies in a board role. I'm looking to help a number of companies accelerate growth, which is what I really love.
What are the characteristics of these companies that you are seeking out now? What grabs you? What causes you to pay attention?
Always what's most important is the management team, the team of people. And that's really the number one, two, and three thing, is the team of people. So one company I've invested in and joined the board of here in Portland is MedRhythms, which was founded by two guys from Maine and is building a music therapy device and system for people with gait issues in walking. And these guys are fabulous. And the company is focused on a very, very large need, a very large opportunity. They have unique technology and IP, recently filed a patent. But it's really the capabilities and the talent of those two founders that interests me.
So narrowing that down then, what do you look for on a well-functioning team? Or what do you look for in a leader, in an entrepreneur?
A lot of it is that combination that we just talked about, where they both listen and don't listen, where they are inspired and unafraid. So a lack of fear is very important, with the ability to manage risks and the vision to do something disruptive and big and build. At the same time, a very strong ability to listen in order to understand customer needs, understand the issues, understand the FDA requirements, certainly in pharma and many other, you know, healthcare situations. Very important to understand and comply with the FDA, and at the same time have the vision to build something big and great.
So just as you're describing an individual who has a certain combination, it must be also true that this team have a very specific set of characteristics.
Yes, it's true, because one of the faults of entrepreneurs or of company leaders, even of much larger companies, is excessive reliance on or power to one person. So I always look for people who balance each other out and can criticize each other. You know, you asked the question about being conflict averse. And so that ability to have conflict that is productive is actually really important. And to do that, you have to have people who respect each other and listen to each other and are unafraid and actually welcome challenging each other. And that's a really important criteria and an important ingredient in success.
I'm not sure that we are actually helping people to learn how to deal with conflict in, I would say, in our current system. I know that's a big statement, but I think a lot of what I see in organizations is people who don't like conflict, instead of verbalizing it and trying to kind of muckle through it, they will pull back, they'll be passive aggressive, they'll leave. And I think part of this is that people don't have a comfort with the idea that it's okay. It is okay to actually feel differently than someone else, have a different idea than someone else.
I think that's extremely well said, and it's an extremely important point. Even the word conflict, it has kind of a negative connotation. I love conflict, but most people don't. And, you know, I grew up with lots of good arguments around the dinner table. And you are absolutely right that we don't necessarily teach people or welcome disagreement, positive, constructive disagreement. And often, I think now, the pendulum is sort of swinging excessively in the direction of teamwork. You know, you can waste a lot of time getting bogged down in trying to do things as a group, instead of doing things in the most productive way possible and having the people who are best at doing things do them. And you can waste a lot of time not surfacing disagreements and get caught by things that someone down the line might have seen early on, but you know, to your point, didn't bring up or didn't feel comfortable bringing up or didn't feel would be welcomed. So I think it's an excellent point.
So how do we get to the other side of that? How do we help people be able to work within this environment? Because as you've proven, it's an environment that can actually be very successful. And if it's successful for the company, it's likely to be successful for the individual and for the economy locally. So it's important to learn.
I think so. It's one of so many things right now that I don't have a good answer for. But I do think you need to pick leaders who have those characteristics. I think welcoming conflict and disagreement and asking questions to get to the bottom of things are very important. Certainly a lot of success in life and behaviors go back to schools. And so if we have teachers who can, great teachers, if I had to cite one thing that's most important in success in America, in, you know, building a successful workforce, I would say great teachers, great elementary school teachers.
You and I both have children. And one of the things I think about often is how I want my children to exist in the world. Whatever it is that I've given them foundationally, how I want them to, and they can do whatever they want, but there are certain things that I hope they've learned from me. What are things that you hope that your children have learned from you?
One of them would be that ability to both listen and hew to their own course. I would hope that both of my kids are good listeners and very perceptive about what's going on in the world around them, even and in particular in unfamiliar situations. We've traveled a lot, so they've spent a lot of time visiting different countries. And that's interesting on so many different levels, but I hope has honed their ability to listen and perceive in different cultural environments and learn from that. So that ability to both listen and chart their own course, I have always hoped most fundamentally for my kids that they were each their own people, that they were smart, that they were kind, that they were tough, that they were good listeners and highly competent, but that most fundamentally that each of them figured out who they were as people and what they want to do and how they want to be and pursue that, not trying to be someone else or be influenced by someone else.
Well, I agree. I hope that my children have exactly that. I think you and I are very kindred spirits on that point. So from your lips to, if there's a God, God's ears. How's that? I've been speaking with Jean Hoffman, who is an executive and entrepreneur who has built successful companies in the global pharmaceutical, veterinary, and healthcare information technology industries, who in 2006 founded Putney, a Portland-based pet medicine company that was sold last year for $200 million. You can read more about Jean in our 50 Mainers issue of Maine Magazine. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.